1-800-850-5150. The number to call in during this live broadcast is 1-800-858-6582. If you have unlimited long distance or are calling from a cell phone, please use our toll number 1-559-733-5161. That's 1-559-733-5161. Thank you.
Yeah, that didn't cheer me up much. At this stage of the game, why not just keep going with this? As he says, our political, economic, and cultural leaders, as I'm continuing with this information from Henry Macau, the quiet war against humanity, the lulling before the culling. Once again, our political, economic, and cultural leaders have sold their souls and betrayed society and their whores, people. That's what they are. They're just plain old whores for the financial debt note dollar that they receive for what they do. He says they're literally servants of Satan. Otherwise, they would not tolerate that both presidential candidates are members of a satanic secret society, the Skull and Bones. They would not tolerate the obvious hoax that took place on September 11th. They imagine they will be privileged members of the New World Order, and history has shown that everyone is expendable. We call ourselves progressive, but that is another example of doublespeak. The progress is only progress for the Illuminati. While man was made in God's image, human life was sacred. When we agreed God was dead, we became expendable. That's why Silent Wars refers to us as beasts of burden and used the Darwinian struggle to justify enslavement and genocide. Satan is not content to destroy us physically. He has a wager with God. Are we made in God's image or not? In order to win, he needs to prove we are nothing but dumb animals. Lack of resistance signifies our acquiescence. We have been progressively demoralized and lulled. We must shake off our stupor and show that we're not jellyfish, but men who will fight for our divine birthright. This is a battle humanity never can evade. The longer it is postponed, the harder it will be to win. Interesting. Very interesting. You know, it's when you do research, when you study what's going on, when you dig deep into what's really going on, there's so much that even people like myself don't know. Which means that people that aren't listening to what's going on tonight here are really behind the eight ball. But I talk about Agenda 21 on a pretty constant basis today. Because it is the plan underway to completely transform society. And it's just beyond me that others don't connect these dots. Why am I so special? And I appreciate my friends being concerned about my depression. You bet. I appreciate it. But it's so big today, and that's what they teach in these think tanks and schools, colleges and universities that get into the conspiracy theories, and that's why Jeff is the way he is, Jeff Nyquist, because he's college educated. I don't know whether he is or not. I'm just certain that he is college educated. This thing is so big, they tell you just go along to get along because you're not going to be able to win if you fight it. So just play with it and deal with it and live with it. Part of this Agenda 21 and the situation that we have is going on in other parts of the world. How many of you heard of the Native Cultures Institute? Which is a Mexican nonprofit association working for the preservation of the native cultures of Baja California. Founded in 1992. Oh, what a coincidence. 1992. What happened in 1992? Do I have to repeat myself again? Agenda 21 came into place in 1992. So this Native Cultures Institute, CUNA, CUNA, founded in 1992, coordinates a number of cultural and social assistance programs through its office in the historic International Company Building in Ensenada. I was very tuned into Ensenada back in the 70s. I used to love it down there, people, with the off-road racing and what I did and watched and viewed and partook in. It's wonderful down there. The people below Ensenada living down there were wonderful people. Happy? Oh, boy. Living next to nothing. Living with nothing. I remember, and I'm getting off track, and you may not want to hear this, but I really don't care. The first time I raced Baja was in 1972 with Kelly Sullivan, my friend. I had the night section. He brought the bike in well up there in the placings. I had the night section. The lights burned out during the night section. When I got into the first pit stop, I got gas and took off again, and the lights weren't going to work. So I went back to the original pit stop there, and I stayed there until it was light enough for me to see so I could continue. And it was so beautiful when it was light enough to see, and I continued that race. And, I was flying by the seat of my pants. I wasn't sure whether the pits were going to still be there for me to get gas. Well, there was one pit stop that was gone, that disappeared. They just took off, and they had every right to take off. Well, actually, they didn't, but they did anyway. I ran out of gas down there in Baja, right in front of a rancho out in the middle of nowhere down there in Baja, right in front of someone's ranch house, a Mexican's ranch house. It was just amazing that I ran out of gas right there. Nothing around anywhere for miles but this one ranch house. A farmhouse, I suppose. I mean, he had farm animals. He had a family. And I asked him for gasolina. ¿Dónde es gasolina? And he had gasoline. And I had spare oil in an oil bottle connected to a belt. And I added oil to the gas, and I continued. And I gave him a $20 bill, and he was so happy. He was so thrilled to get that $20 bill. And I was so thrilled to give it to him. But the people down there in Baja at the time, in 1972, were wonderful people. And they liked the simple life down there. They enjoyed the simple life. They enjoyed seeing the races down there. But progressively, slowly but surely, over the years, it became more and more of an intrusion of us coming down there. And by 1981, when I did my last Baja 500, the Mexican local people were building traps along the race course to watch people crash because of the temperament of the people growing up, the children growing up, the jealousy maybe, the Mexican people receiving no compensation for their land being abused by us, where the Mexican government took all the money for us to race down there. What a totalitarian communist government Mexico has, as they've just rekindled their life with Cuba and their directions with communist Cuba. Mexico City has, and Mexico, which Baja California is a part of. Point being that the manipulative direction by the governments in place to pit man against each other was alive and well in that field as well, off-road racing. But I always remember running out of gas in front of this place, this poor farmer's house, and I was just so fortunate to have that happen. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to finish the race in the allotted amount of time. So you have this Native Cultures Institute. Their membership includes members of the indigenous communities, in close and highly effective cooperation with Mexican and U.S. citizens. CUNA, once again, the Native Cultures Institute, has received support from government agencies, NGOs, and individuals from both sides of the border. Well, with that support, what kind of capitulation is necessary, people? That's the question you have to ask yourselves, and that's the research that needs to be done. By those in charge. Those that are understanding that they're part of the UN system need to do their research. Is it going to happen? You tell me. The Institute's Priority Assistance Program, that's the Institute's Priority Assistance Program, the Medical Aid Network, provides volunteer medical services, donated medicines, and medical equipment directly in the communities as well as in Ensenada. Other programs channel donated materials and scholarships to indigenous schools. What are they going to be teaching in the schools, people, with these scholarships? Work toward improvement of water systems and encourage greater economic self-sufficiency through support for artisans. See, a lot of this is good. How can you discount a lot of this good that comes into place when they're so poor down there? When the Mexican government has been so suppressive to the people all these many decades. Over the years, the Institute has organized 7 international indigenous gatherings, bringing together people, native people from Mexico, U.S., and Canada. Carried out over 40 trips to Baja California, Indian artisans, singers, dancers, elected and cultural authorities to participate in programs and workshops in museums, state parks, indigenous communities, and powwows in California and Arizona. CUNA, the Native Cultures Institute, also organizes the Baja California Indigena Symposiums, exploring the anthropology, archaeology, linguistics, and indigenous history of Baja California. Information on these subjects is also available at the Baja California Indigena Archives, located in Cuna's office of the historic old Maritime Customs Building in Ensenada. Donations of documents, images, or other materials related to these subjects in English or Spanish are gladly accepted. In 1996, Cuna participated in building a Cunanay environmental strategy, a U.S.-Mexico border frontera 2000 community planning project, in collaboration with the Campo Environmental Protection Agency to assess water systems and infrastructure in five Cunel communities of Baja California. The results from this project were published in the document entitled Water Quality in Cunay Communities of Baja California, which was presented at the Binational Cunay Summit in Tecate, Baja California, also organized by Cuna. In 1997 and 1998, the Institute participated in the projects Environmental Concerns of Indian Groups of the California Baja California border region, in collaboration with the Southwest Center for Environmental Research and Policy, and initiated the project Sustainable Development in the Indigenous Communities of Baja California with support from the Council for Environmental Cooperation. The Institute developed the Traveling Museum exhibit entitled Walking Ancient Pathways, Native People of Baja California, which traveled to the San Diego Museum of Man in 1998 to 1999 and is traveling in Baja California in 2000. During the 1999-2000, Cuna also carried out a wetlands restoration project in the Cunay community of San Jose de la Zora, with the assistance of the Campo Cunanay Reservation and the Cleveland National Forest. Eventually, people, there will be no borders between us and Mexico and us and Canada. If you search the NAFTA documents, the NAFTA binders, the NAFTA books, you might find that there would be no borders eventually. During 1999-2000, Cuna also participated in the project Environmental Education in the Indigenous Communities of Baja California, including the education of the textbook We Belong to the Earth. Currently, Cuna is working with the communities of Santa Catarina, San Jose de la Zora, to develop geographic information systems and resource management plans through the support of the Border 21 program. The UABC and the Southwest Center for Environmental Research and Policy. Nativa Indian Echo Art, supported by the Council for Environmental Cooperation, promotes sustainable development through traditional, environmentally friendly green goods and services. Well, that includes the biosolids on what they grow, people, which is going to be happening here too. What are biosolids? Figure it out for yourselves. The Cuna newsletter, published biannually, presents news and culture from the communities as well as information regarding Cuna activities. The Native Cultures Institute carries out all these activities through the cooperation of a growing number of volunteers from a variety of backgrounds and communities. They say in order to continue these important activities and to expand these highly successful programs, Cuna depends entirely on the support of concerned individuals and organizations, and you're encouraged to join them. The Culture Institute's I'm sorry, the Native Cultures Institute. It's a myth But how can you fault it when you don't know what's being done and driven and what's happening? The Border 21 program, their framework document, October 1996. It's absolutely amazing, people. Here we see, I have the manual right here. And this is dated October 15th, 1996, by, it's a letter from Dr. Ernesto Zedillo Ponce de Leon. That's two, and it's from Julia Carballas Lillo. And the subject is the introduction of the Border 21 program. It's the Secretary of Environment, Natural Resources, and Fishery. They state, it is a pleasure to inform you that the Border 21 program has been concluded and is responsive to the commitment made by your government to generate environmental alternatives for the border community of our country. The program establishes objectives, projects, and actions for the protection of the environment, natural resources, and the health of residents of the northern border area of our country. This document has been negotiated with the United States government and continues previous efforts in the interinstitutional collaboration, both domestically and binationally. The participation of state governments, municipalities, and local governments, as well as that of academia, the private sector, and non-governmental organizations have been equally important in this effort. The UN system, people. Nobody's paying attention to this. No one has the documentation, hardly. Even when they do have the documentation, they don't read it. I know people that have file cabinets full of documentation that don't bring it out and read it anymore. Well, Border 21, part of the NAFTA, part of Agenda 21, part of the UN system, and you're going to hear more of this from Julia Carballas Lillo regarding the introduction of the Border 21 program. Through an intense process of public participation, the residents of both sides of the border have enriched the document by sharing their concerns and proposing solutions for their communities. Together, the secretaries, Rojas de la Fuente, we believe we have achieved an integrated program that addresses the complex environmental problems affecting the border communities. The document attempts to promote a transition towards sustainable development in the border area by seeking a balance among social and economic factors, the protection of the environment, and natural resources. Likewise, our commitment is to face the challenge of translating the medium-range goals of the program into visible and tangible results. To this end, both governments have agreed to take actions to develop environmental performance indicators that will allow qualitative and quantitative tracking of the progress achieved by the program and guide future budgetary decisions. We consider that the present program will contribute significantly to the long history of bilateral environmental cooperation in the border area. Through the different levels of government and through new channels of collaboration facing the 21st century. With this, we want to reinforce our commitment to the environment and natural resources and the well-being of the population of the region. It says, we don't need to cover that. This is a large manual, one of many. In this manual, entitled U.S.-Mexico Border 21 Program, it states, way back here in a certain page, In the appendix 4.6, the North American Development Bank, located in San Antonio, Texas, was created by the U.S. and Mexican governments as part of the North American Free Trade Agreement process in order to serve as a financial partner and catalyst in developing environmental infrastructure along the border between the two countries. Ah, interesting. Let me check something out here. Okay, that's not relevant, so we won't deal with it. I apologize. Concurrent with the establishment of the NADBANC, the Border Environment Cooperation Commission, the BECC, was created to ensure community participation in determining environmental priorities and to certify projects seeking financial support from the NADBANC. That's the North American Development Bank. That's why it's so important to attend city council meetings in your areas to see what's being engineered. Not just at the border region, but entirely everywhere in this country, because Agenda 21 is being implemented everywhere. It's called LA 21 and Communities 21, people. The BECC, which is the Border Environment Cooperation Commission, determines whether a project that meets certain technical, financial, and environmental criteria should be certified as eligible for NADBANC financing. Thus, project sponsors seeking NADBANC financing must first apply to the BECC for certification. Oh, maybe that doesn't mean anything to you people. Well, let's just hear more of it. The NADBANC and the BECC provide assistance to authorities at all levels of government in the U.S. and Mexico, as well as the private sector, concerning appropriate ways to formulate and structure the financial aspects of environmental infrastructure projects in the border region. The areas of priority for both institutions and freshwater supply, wastewater treatment, and solid waste disposal. The NADBANC is focusing special attention on the small communities in the border region, which may have greater difficulty in securing the resources necessary for their environmental infrastructure. The NADBANC, in concert with the federal authorities of each country, will help administer a program for community adjustment and investment in support of the purposes of the NAFTA. The program will assist businesses that help adjusting to a post-NAFTA economy. The NADBANC's capital amounts to $3 billion, contributed in equal parts by the governments of the United States and Mexico over a four-year period, which began in 1995. 15% of this capital, $450 million, will be subscribed as paid in capital, while the remainder will be in callable capital. That's callable capital. To date, both governments have met their contribution commitments, and the NADBANC currently has capital totaling $1.5 million, of which $225 million is paid in capital. The U.S. Department of Treasury estimates that NADBANC operations may generate up to $9 billion in investments over the next 10 years. Oh, boy. Where are you going to hear this but anywhere but here? And why am I depressed, people?
Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Where did ants learn to be gardeners? Find out next on today's Creation Moment. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Farming and gardening are said by evolutionary scientists to be very advanced activities. They say that primitive man did not do these things. Gardening developed only recently in man's history. But if there is a creator, we would expect that he would have taught many kinds of creatures to care for plants or even trees. Guess what? There are even ants who garden. There is a particular type of fierce ant which cares for the South American bullhorn acacia tree. While the ants don't need the tree for their survival, they do eat portions of it. But they never eat enough to cause damage to the tree. In fact, the ants protect their tree. They snip off any vines or other growth which comes too close to the tree, maintaining plenty of growing room for their tree. The ants are aggressive enough to keep the other insects or even birds or larger animals away from their tree. In studying this amazing relationship, researchers have removed the ants from some of these trees. Within 2 to 15 months, the tree is dead. Without the ants' care, animals eat off all the leaves and the surrounding plants overrun it. Who taught these ants to be gardeners? How could two so very different kinds of life develop such a close relationship? This results in a great mystery for evolution. Without ants, you couldn't evolve the tree. And without the tree, the ants couldn't learn to care for it. You can't get around it. Both were created fully formed, and the Creator taught the ants how to care for the tree.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the Internet and following the instructions there to support us, or call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening.
Could it just be you, and you're the same in me, or was it jealousy, and insecurity, or could it just be you, you're the misery, or was it always you, just wanting to be free? I see the marks laid on your skin. Was it 'cause of me? I sense the fear that's in the air. Is it 'cause of me?
Okay, we're back dealing with this, Border 21, some more. You can never get enough of it because there's so much of it. U.S.-Mexico Border 21 Program, and this is the framework document, October 1996. We're dealing with the North American Development Bank, and they state that the U.S. Department of Treasury estimates that NADBank operations may generate up to $9 billion in investments over the next 10 years. The U.S. Treasury, the Secretary of the State, or the Secretary of the Treasury, is the governor of the International Monetary Fund, the U.S. governor. It is anticipated that the NADBank resources will be supplemented with other sources of financing, including financial markets, commercial banks, institutional investors, direct private sector investment, existing governmental funds, the World Bank, and the Inter-American Development Bank, of which the Secretary of the Treasury is the governor of the Inter-American Development Bank. The Secretary of the Treasury is the governor of the World Bank as well. Once again, U.S. Government Manual, 1991-92. In addition, the Secretary has many responsibilities as Chief Financial Officer of the government. The Secretary serves as Chairman Pro Tempore of the Economic Policy Council and as U.S. Governor of the International Monetary Fund, the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, which is the World Bank, people, the Inter-American Development Bank, there you have it, and the African Development Bank. Oh, and this is conspiracy theory? You've got to be joking, people. This is full, hardcore documentation about the implementation of what's going on. And it's not pleasant when you understand the big picture in place. In the meantime, our sons and daughters and fathers and mothers are off to war for the UN system. Everything gets turned over to the UN when it's all over and done with. They're talking about sovereignty in Iraq because people are upset and uptight about what happened in Bosnia and Herzegovina, in Kosovo, and elsewhere. I have a big dissertation about population relocation in Vietnam I haven't covered, which I will in the near future. So we move to Appendix 7 of this document. Border 21 Community Grant Projects, U.S.-Mexico Border Region. And they say that last fall, and this must have been 1996, EPA awarded a total of 14 Border 21 Community Grants, each for up to $35,000 in funding for communities as the U.S.-Mexico Border Region. EPA, people, EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, part of the State Department now. EPA's Office of International Activities initiated the grant program to strategically address environmental issues in the U.S.-Mexico border region by strengthening local capacity at the community level. As part of EPA's place-based environmental decision-making initiative, these grants will assist border communities to respond to environmental and related health needs, particular in their situation and location in the border area. The work that will be accomplished through these grants will provide valuable public input into the development of Border 21. The Environmental Protection Agency has awarded these Border 21 community grants to empower the various sister cities and border communities of California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas, and as a means of identifying their specific needs and priorities and facilitating more effective coordination with local, state, and federal governments. All of these grants have a one-year project period for completion, and EPA's Office of International Activities expects to meet with all the grant recipients next year to review the results of these projects and assess their input to the U.S.-Mexico border program. And what was the results of that? I don't have the documentation of the results of that, people. But do you suppose Ranch Rescue ought to know about Border 21? What's going on here? All they want to do is defend their land. Can you blame them? Well, not really, but they ought to understand that it's the UN system in place that's engineering all this. If their local sheriffs are savvy to what's going on, that would be an extreme blessing. Let's hope that's going on with these ranch rescue people. Let's hope they're understanding the documentation in place about all this so they can work strategically with the right authorities with what's going on. Appendix 8 deals with the social and economic overview of the U.S.-Mexico border, which is defined as the area between 100 kilometers on either side of the international boundary includes four U.S. border states and six Mexican border states, along the international boundary that includes 39 Mexican municipalities, 25 U.S. counties, and 14 pairs of sister cities. This area stretches almost 300 kilometers from the Pacific Ocean to the Gulf of Mexico. They're using kilometers in the metric system because of the U.N. standardization system, listeners. Many other U.S. countries and Mexican municipalities are located entirely or partially in the 200-kilometer zone, but are not adjacent to the international boundary. And somewhere I have that executive order, which was it was extended to 150 miles on this side of the border. And I don't know what that is in kilometers. But anyway, you get the picture. I hope. It's the UN system. That's what's being engineered here. Under the guise of NAFTA, which came from the GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, which was formed in 1947. The General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade formed in 1947. Yeah, sure, they voted on it by a majority vote in 1994. It was well underway since 1947. The UN system. He had that Jacuzzi show with Mark Mays, and he was spending time here, and I invited him, invited those Jacuzzi people to be involved, and I was just as depressed then as I am now. He said, "Chris, you're all about the UN, nothing else." And I keep saying, "Well, gee." When most Americans don't have a clue about the UN system, what is more important? But to keep harping on this UN system. Okay, Aaron's back. That's good to know. Glad you're here. I felt lonely with you not being there, Aaron. So, if you have anything to say, which maybe you do, maybe you don't, you can call in now. 800-858-6582. Maybe I put you all to sleep. I don't care. It's all documentation. It's hard to deal with. But you got to keep in mind that the United Nations Charter was unlawfully ratified as a treaty. It did not qualify as a treaty because it calls for, ultimately, general and complete disarmament in this country. Any instrument of any sort or kind which calls for the elimination of the nation's common defense systems is in gross violation of the principles of liberty. It can't be a treaty, people. The United Nations itself, it was not a sovereign government. At the time this so-called treaty was prepared and ratified, and on this basis alone, the so-called treaty could be declared null and void. And it wasn't until March 19, 1970, that the UN declared itself to be a sovereign government. At the time that UN Charter was ratified as a treaty, which was July 45, evidently, the proponents of world government began the move from theory into implementation of the world government systems, people. The United Nations organization had set itself down as a parallel government. assisted by advancements gained through the use of executive orders of the president, additional treaty agreements and legislative acts of the U.S. Congress. The UN has grown into a monster, people. But really, you know, no treaty can lawfully supersede the principles of the U.S. Constitution or the 50 state constitutions, nor the confirmed endowments of the Creator embodied in the Bill of Rights. One UN treaty calls for the complete disarming of every American citizen, people. This destroys the function of the militia, and that's the people at large, even though it is commanded in the Second Amendment of the Bill of Rights. There's no doubt about it. The UN Charter does not care about the security of our free state. It is intended to overthrow our state constitutions and our federal constitution. And ultimately, no nation can survive after its common defense has been seized by a foreign power and its citizens have been disarmed. Keep in mind, also, that a treaty, if it meets constitutional requirements, is enforceable upon every individual because there are no withdrawal rights within the UN Charter. It is mandatory for the individual states to initiate an action demanding that the United Nations Participation Act of 1945 and the 1945 amendments be revoked, rescinded, and repealed. And this is where I draw the line with Freedom 21. We need to get out of the UN. We don't need an alternative to Agenda 21. We need to get out of the UN system. One of the goals of the proponents of the UN Charter is to disintegrate the federal constitution so slowly that the people will adopt and not object to the switchover. Thus, the parallel government will ultimately remain as the only government. The formula for the operation of this vicious plan was conceived by Charles E. Merriam, the Rockefeller engineer who guided Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Merriam, who believed that outright revolution was the old way, and that communism could be brought in using the coattails of the Constitution itself. And he's quoted as saying, quote, "Fortunately, our Constitution is broad enough in its terms, flexible enough in its spirit, and capable of liberal enough interpretation by the judiciary to permit the adaption of democracy to changing conditions without serious difficulty," end quote. And he also promoted the use of the word democracy to be used as a stand-in word for the word communism. And this is the bottom line problem. Go check out the Communitarian Network. It's on the web. Bookmark it. Research it. Sad, sad times. And yeah, I'm depressed. You better believe. I've been depressed all my life. I mean, there's so many things that have happened in the past. We haven't hardly ever talked about NSSM 200, National Security Study Memorandum 200. equaling zero population growth. It is a mess. Henry Kissinger was behind this. We have a review of national security policy information here regarding Information Project for Africa, which has been singled out to be eliminated, the population, through the AIDS-created epidemic. They state that population assistance has been a major part of the United States foreign and aid program since 1965. And this document is which a part of a series of papers for the U.S. foreign policy and population issues is based on memoranda of the National Security Council, which has been declassified since mid-1989, and on reports by the General Accounting Office and private publishers. Its purpose is to provide background on objectives which form the basis for U.S. population intervention in the developing world. We'll try to deal with that tomorrow night. I don't know. Maybe so. Maybe not. It's the U.N. system, people. I don't know. I could cover other topics, but I would be doing a disservice to our country. Everywhere you look, the UN is in place. The UN is in place in our schools. The UN is in place in the United Way, in your football tickets for the NFL, as the NFL players have to have their tax shelters. Well, they have their tax shelters with the United Way, a non-governmental organization of the United Nations. I mean, I appreciate my friends being concerned about my depression. But when you know as much as I do, and you can document as much as I have, how can you be positive about anything that's going on? How can you be positive about the birth rate of teenagers? Sex education being taught at a young age, so they learn and practice at a young age, and so you have pregnant children and feel sorry for those babies, don't you? And think of all the damn abortions. Our most favored trading partner, Communist China, eats aborted fetuses as a health food. Boy, they sure quieted that one down, haven't they? They've made that very quiet, haven't they? In the Sunday paper of the Oklahoman, wetland area offers slew of sights. One of the prettiest Oklahoma sunrises I have ever seen near Red Slough in McCartan County in southeastern Oklahoma. Fittingly, the sun was a huge red plate or plat in the sky, and it hit the marshy land with a palette of light that turned a routine morning into something special, they say. This is quite a lengthy article. Not long afterwards, still somewhat stunned by the sun's greeting, I watched flocks of large American white pelicans cruise the water surface to land among feeding geese and ducks. Graceful long-legged shore birds stalked the shallows, and the cries of many species blended in a wilderness melody, the start of another perfect day at Red Slough. Well, being that we're just about out of time, the Red Slough Wildlife Management Area can be difficult to find, they say. They have directions. The Red Slough Wildlife Management Area has become a haven for birds and waterfowl, as well as white-tailed deer, beaver, mink, nutria, and the American alligator is alive and well in Oklahoma, people. The American alligator. Well, when we're put on the same foundation and basis as an alligator, as a tiger and a lion, mountain lion. It's all a UN thing. And that is our sad commentary that we have. Wetland areas, wildlife areas. Here's another one. Dated July 18th. Organization faces many challenges. They're talking about world neighbors. We're running out of time. World Neighbors was born. Let's see. We just don't have time. We'll have to deal with this tomorrow. And we covered Nature Conservancy sponsoring tour of buffalo sculptures. We covered that. That was July 16th. Those buffalo sculptures. We're all being brainwashed and inundated with directions to manipulate us into cooperation with the UN system. And this is the way it is, and this is the way it is being done. And yeah, it's hard not to be depressed when you know as much as I do. And I wish I wasn't depressed. But when you know as much as I do and you know how dumbed down the population is, what else is there to feel? You see? When you're surrounded by ignorance and apathy, and then you have the Congressional Medal of Honor as the highest award for valor under combat circumstances, Lucifer's symbol, the upside down five-pointed star, people don't have a clue about. But I've been living with my depression for a long time. I'm depressed for our country. I'm depressed for the soldiers that fought in Korea and Vietnam and died and lived, and the POWs that never came home. I bleed for Robert Russell Garwood, Bobby Garwood, who came home to say there were more. And he was told by the head colonel in Vietnam that you're going to go home to hell. And he was right. Why did he know so much about that? We'll be back tomorrow, God willing. Good night, listeners.
The sadness in your eyes is because of me. I feel the anger of your heart is because of me.
This program on FirstAmendmentRadio.com is much more than entertainment. It is more like an information-packed audio magazine delivered direct to you. Like any magazine, if you don't want...